This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company. For more information and links to all our great podcasts, visit hartmanmedia.com.
Welcome to the American Monetary Association's podcast, where we explore how monetary policy impacts the real lives of real people and the action steps necessary to preserve wealth and enhance one's lifestyle.
It's my pleasure to welcome Zach Ward. He is a Hollywood actor of Bully Scott Farkas in the 1983 perennial Christmas movie A Christmas Story. He also acted in the blockbuster hits Ed, Wild America, Almost Famous, Freddy vs. Jason, Resident Evil, and Transformers. He's CEO of Global Sports Financial Exchange and All Sports Market. Zach, welcome. How are you?
I'm good, sir. How are you doing?
Good. Good to have you on the show. Give our listeners a sense of geography. Where are you located?
I'm here in Studio City, California right now.
Good stuff. I grew up in LA, so I know it well. You're doing something really interesting. You're doing a couple of things. Number one, you're trying to teach financial literacy, which is sorely needed. I taught junior achievement for 3 years, and I couldn't believe how these kids just know nothing about finance. It's like the school system, I think, it's like a conspiracy. They don't want to teach anybody about finance, or, you know, so they'll all be drones probably. But that's maybe another topic. and then you've also got this exchange where you say to the people who are betting on sports teams, stop betting and start investing. So we'll talk about both of these things. Which would you like to talk about first? Give us a little background.
So All Sports Market is the first and only stock market of sports teams. People have the opportunity to buy shares in their favorite teams. It's a performance derivative. As their teams do better, as they win games, they are paid out dividends from the dividend reserves of the losing team. As they continue through the season, the shares increase in value based upon the market response. So for example, the Phillies last year started at $5.60, and when they got close to winning the Super Bowl, they got up towards $15. Throughout that process, they were also winning games, earning dividend reserves from the losing teams, and their share price continued to go up. And the other great thing is, once the season is over, once the games are done, you still own all the shares. So even in the off season, your shares may and can increase in value based upon what's happening with your team. For example, if during the drafts there's new player picks, or there are new coaches, or they get a new stadium, or perhaps one of the athletes tweets out to some kid who got bullied and offers to mentor him or have him on the sidelines of the game, that generates interest from the marketplace, and then they become more aware of the team and they find another way to buy shares. So it's exactly like the New York Stock Exchange.
Very interesting, but I think you probably need to make the disclosure. This is not actual stock. It's not like you own part of the team, the Broncos
right.
or the Bulls.
It's a derivative
exactly. based on performance. So it's like betting. What's the difference between this and betting?
Gambling is a zero-sum game. So if you bet on your team and I buy 100 shares in the team and the team loses the game, you have nothing. I still have 100 shares. And the team is going to play multiple games in a season. And depending upon their performance, my shares will go up and down in value. But even if this team completely sucks the entire season, at the end of that season, I still have 100 shares and you still have nothing. So those shares I own in perpetuity.
So, you know, when you were saying the winnings are paid out of the reserve account of the losing team, it sort of begged the question. I was wondering, can you short a team? Can you bet or not bet, but, well, a short is a bet, right? Everything's a bet in a way on them doing poorly. You know, what if you think the team's going to do poorly? Can you make that wager?
Yes, you can definitely short teams as well as buy low, sell high.
Very interesting stuff. So is this actually operational yet? Is this happening? Well, I guess it is, right? I mean, how long has it been around?
It is. It's been around for 17 years. It was leveled up to be released in brokerages in 2008. And then obviously the entire economy took a dump. And so the company started to pivot towards turning it into an app structure. And in the last 4 years, we first launched the learning market, which is if you go to allsportsmarket.com and you go to the learning market, you get a $2,500 of learning currency, which is basically a play money for you to practice understanding the market and working with it. So that's the learning market. Mm-hmm. Then 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago, we launched the pilot market, which is for real money with a cap of $2,500 investment per year. Uh-huh. So we started off as we have basketball, football, baseball, and hockey, the big four. In the last 4 years, we went from a market cap of $100 million between the learning market and the pilot market. And this last January, we hit a market cap high of $2.7 billion. Now, this is between both the pilot and the learning market, and it's only with 7,000 sports traders in 90 countries. But this has been our beta to get everything structured properly to make sure all our algorithms work and that we don't have any holes in our code and that everything is encrypted and transparent perfectly for security reasons. Our process now is to take everything that we've done in this process and turn it towards regulation as we're in talks with the SEC, CFTC, and making sure that we abide by Fed and state rules.
So this has been around a while. It's not in brokerages, though. That never happened, right? Because of the recession.
No.
Right. Okay.
Yes, sir.
So you can't buy this on Wall Street. You can't invest in these things through the Wall Street firms. And so they go to the site and you've got 7,000 customers using it?
We have 7,000 sports traders right now.
Okay.
Yeah.
And when you quoted those huge market cap figures, what do you mean when you say market cap? Do you mean the total amounts of all the wagers? It's not the value of this company, I assume.
Right. You're right. It's the total amount of all the shares purchased and traded inside the market.
Wow. Interesting. Interesting stuff. So where's this going?
Well, our end goal, like I said, is full regulation from the SEC, turn this into a new economic force that can be utilized not only here in the United States for Americans to invest in their favorite teams, but also worldwide, where other countries are huge fans of our teams and our sports. But there's also cricket, and there's also soccer, and there's also Australian rules rugby. And we also have the patents on that process. So where we want to be and what's started to be happening is that other exchanges in other countries are interested about putting us on their exchange and using this financial technology as another option they can offer. Mm-hmm. So that's where we really want to be. We want to turn this into a fully regulated market.
Yeah, okay. So you want it to be regulated. I'm curious.
Yeah.
You know, most business people would say they'd prefer less regulation. Why do you want to be regulated?
Well, because in this situation, you can contribute so much opportunity to the country by going through the proper channels. Instead of being something that's fly by night and it's highly risky, the goal is to become something that has 100% legitimacy in the eyes of the world and is safe and is garnered so that people have an opportunity to make good investments. So that's why we've been looking at the long view as opposed to the short turnaround.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. So you prefer the regulation. I mean, you know, then at least you know what rules, what playing field you're on. You know, that's the problem with government. They selectively enforce and all this stuff. So just out of curiosity, what is the cost of your regulatory compliance, you know, so far? And what do you estimate it being overall when you get all the regulations you want?
That is a tricky question to answer as it's constantly fluctuating,
but
it's definitely high seven figures.
Yeah, okay. So would it be fair to ask, is one of the reasons you want to be regulated so that it makes the bar higher for competitors to come into your field?
No, I mean, we want there to be competition in this marketplace. We want people to offer alternatives to gambling. Sports and money, the only way they've interacted for the last 100,000 years or ever since sports was invented.
Maybe not 100,000, but okay.
Well, who knows?
Possibly.
Know, when there were cavemen and the first sport was don't get eaten by a tiger, there may have been someone betting on it.
Yeah.
And historically, the only way to interact money in sports is gambling. But the problem is it's cancerous. Mm-hmm. It causes a lot of problems. It's a zero-sum game.
Right.
And I believe that we can come up with better options than what we've just done in the past. This is the first version of that. And we also believe that this can create a huge amount of economic growth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like there's $450 billion a year that goes into offshore gambling for sports. And if we can bring a percentage of that back into the country and have it be taxable income, and have other people be creating expanding market opportunities, just like the stock exchange did, then we have an opportunity to bring more money back into the country as opposed to just being lost. And we've had the rarity of meeting people who actually used to be very intense gamblers. And as you're well aware, there is Gamblers Anonymous for a reason. And gambling is designed specifically to be addictive and punch out endorphin and dopamine and serotonin and make you very happy, regardless of whether or not you're winning the money, just so you keep on chugging your money into that slot machine. So those problems have been around for a long time. And we've met people who have been gone through hell because of this. They run the risk of losing their families, losing their jobs.
Oh, yeah. Of course, gambling is terrible. We'll all agree with you there.
People do take a joy, mental satisfaction from being able to put together the ideas of the sports or the teams that they love and using the math. That's what our brains are designed to do, is create a see and create patterns. So we've met people who have been able to step away from gambling and utilize our platform to do something that is still satisfies them. At the same time, does not expose them to that level of risk, and something that they can actually discuss with their wives, their husbands, or their children, and not be ashamed of it.
Okay. So it's more investing oriented for sure. Talk to us a little bit. You started to talk to me about it off air before we started, about the unholy alliance between sports and gambling. Not from the aspect of how gambling just ruins people's lives. Of course it does. Listen, I live in the scummy city of Las Vegas. I've lived here a year and a half. I hate this city. I don't know why I moved here. I never liked it when I visited. But anyway, you know, it's the closest place to the Socialist Republic of California with no state income taxes. That was my motivation, being from California. You know, there's obviously the gambling ruins lives. There's no question about that. But what about, like, you know, the way it influences the sport and Pete Rose and, you know, some of these types of stories and things? Explain that to listeners, if you would.
When there's a lot of money to be made on a single game, then people cheat. People throw the game. Referees do bad things. The FIFA scandals that went on during the World Cup and before that were huge. The impact that it has on the sport itself, when someone can stand to make hundreds of thousands of millions of dollars if they just miss the ball. Well, the massive problem with that is then you take away from sports what the key of sports is, which is integrity. If you don't have integrity of sports, you don't have sport. It's the reason why Lance Armstrong had his wins stripped from him. It's the reason why the Russians were not allowed to compete in the Olympics. Because when they're doping or when they're cheating or when they're found to be throwing the game, it undermines the entire tectonic plates of what sports is. Indulging in that is a toxic culture because it filters down to the youngest minds around us, mm-hmm. our children.
Yeah.
And it's one thing if someone's a gambler, and they have so much money that they can afford to set some of it on fire, and they have nothing better to do with their time, and that's what they enjoy, and they go to Vegas and they set their money on fire, but they're 21 or older. Okay. But when you start making gambling an institutional part of sports and accepting that the ends justifies the means, that it doesn't matter anymore what sportsmanship is. It doesn't matter that the person who did that amazing thing did it not because they were jacked on steroids, not because they put lead shot in the baseball bat, but because they actually accomplished something. Not only does that undermine on a moral value what sport represents to everybody, which is the ability to achieve something beyond your expectations based upon hard work and effort, right, which is a symbol of the human soul, but on the flip side, it shows that the entire thing is a lie.
Yep.
So now we have people who don't care anymore.
Right.
And then it becomes Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome, which is great to watch in a movie theater, but two men enter, one man leaves is not the way it's supposed to be when you're watching baseball.
Sure. Okay. Blockchain and Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies are all the rage nowadays.
Yes.
I think it's a huge bubble, and I'd love to be wrong about that. I've said it many times before. Do you have any, I mean, we're talking about, you know, sort of an interesting business model for sports and so forth. Do you have any involvement with the crypto side of things?
We have no involvement with the crypto. We have no involvement with the cryptocurrency. We are working on blockchain. We're working on a proprietary blockchain to interact with our exchange to create an ultimate level of transparency and security. I can't get into too much details because we're just applying for our patents right now. But I'm sure you know what this is. A lot of people sort of blend the two conversations between cryptocurrency and blockchain and think they're one and the same, when in fact, they're very different. Because blockchain is actually a decentralized ledger system that allows you to ensure that nothing's being manipulated because everything is transparent.
Yep.
And it was one of the challenges that we looked at, because when blockchain first started popping up and everybody was, I'm sure you heard about this, there was a company out of Long Island called Long Island Iced Tea, and they didn't make the alcoholic version. They just made iced tea.
Yeah.
And then they called it Long Island Blockchain, and all of a sudden their stock shot up. Now, the SEC is smacked down on this.
But that's interesting that I wonder, you know, I've always wondered about that story and I never really followed it closely, but what would the SEC actually be able to do? I mean, just because they change their name, I mean, you can call yourself that, and unless they literally went out to investors and represented that, you know, we have some new blockchain technology and that's why we're going to be worth $1 zillion. I mean, just because the investors are stupid enough to throw money at anything with the name blockchain in it, that's not their fault, right?
You're right. It's not criminal. I mean, what is it that...
Well, Kodak, someone did it with like Kodak too or something. I can't remember that story. But
so many companies were doing it without actually adding any new value to their company or any technology that the SEC turned around and said, no, you can't do that anymore. You actually have to prove you are utilizing some form of blockchain in order to.
Then the company should go to Coinbase and buy a Bitcoin and stick it in the company's bank account. And I guess they're using blockchain. I mean, you know, seriously, I don't know. I'm not really sure there's a law against what they did, but, you know, I'm not the expert.
I think what was happening is, like, on a one or two piece level, I don't think there would have been that type of response. But when it became so massive, I think they stepped in to stop the damage. Because I don't know if you ever looked this up, but if you go on to GoDaddy.com and you're looking up different websites that you can buy, I looked up one that had a blockchain in it. It was $150,000, whereas it didn't matter a week before. It was like $8. So it was just this massive bubble that, again, like you said, this massive bubble. And the problem with a massive bubble is when it bursts, people get wet. And then that affects everybody else.
Right. Interesting stuff. Good. We've got to wrap it up here, but is there any question I didn't ask you or anything you want to share with the listeners, maybe even about your financial literacy, promotion of financial literacy, which I think is hugely important, especially for young people. It's really tragic how few people understand finance in any way whatsoever. Just personal finance. I'm not talking about corporate finance. Just how to manage finances in your own life, how to invest, you know, it's crazy.
Exactly. So that's one of the things that we love about this is, and that we have an educational platform for financial literacy, because, you know, I've met a lot of people that I've done interviews with, and they had problems with math when they were kids. And yet their parents would turn around and use their favorite sport, football, baseball, basketball, or say the statistics in baseball, their RBIs, or the number of times at first base, blah, blah, blah. And they would use these statistics that the kid already knew and appreciated in order to explain math. And all of a sudden, because the child had a relationship with the concept, then it became easier and it became fun. So if you try to explain market fluctuations and the Dow or to a child, they're going to fall asleep. But if you ask them, who's your favorite team? And they say, Patriots. And you go, okay. And you go buy 100 shares of the Patriots on the learning market. And while you're watching the game with your son or daughter and your friends, and you can in real time look at what is happening with those shares on the market, then very quickly that kid is seeing the correlation between the two in a way that also makes them feel involved. And so by the end of a season, win, lose, or draw for the team is really irrelevant. What happens is that child grasps through osmosis the concept of investing and also feels proud about it, as opposed to feeling chastised into learning something. Oh, gosh, gee darn it, I don't want to know that. Now they feel cool. And if you've got an eight-year-old who in the end of a couple of years of you buying these learning capital shares on the market, they're able to make their own decisions and you can play with them what decisions they want to do. Do you want to short this, sell high, do that?
Yeah, they definitely learn how it all works. I just hate to see them take their money and throw it away on Wall Street because Wall Street's very good at separating people from their money. But that's sort of another discussion.
That's true. But yeah. The whole thing is like, if you get them into the conversation of making investments instead of just throwing their money away early, then they have a higher percentage chance of making a good decision.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
That's fantastic.
Good stuff. Well, give the listeners the website again and tell them where they can find out more.
It is allsportsmarket.com. That's one word. Drop by, check it out, sign on, use the learning market, get $2,500 for free. And if you have any questions, you can leave them there or you can hit me up on Twitter at Total, TotalZackWard. That's Total Zach Ward. So I'm there on Twitter and the same handle for Instagram. So if you have any questions or suggestions, please reach out and say hello.
Zach, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Hey, my pleasure, sir. Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening. Please be sure to subscribe so that you don't miss any episodes. Be sure to check out the show's specific website and our general website, hartmanmedia.com, for appropriate disclaimers and terms of service. Remember that guest opinions are their own. And if you require specific legal or tax advice or advice in any other specialized area, please consult an appropriate professional. And we also very much appreciate you reviewing the show. Please go to iTunes or Stitcher Radio or whatever platform you're using and write a review for the show. We would very much appreciate that. And be sure to make it official and subscribe so you do not miss any episodes. We look forward to seeing you on the next episode.